Hello everyone, I would like to welcome you all as well on this nice snowy day, especially the Living Discipleship group, which is doing a month-long intensive at the meditation retreat, many of them with the view of living in an Ananda community or deepening their attunement with these teachings. And we'll have them up later for a blessing. This topic is fun and interesting, and hopefully there's a way to make it applicable to all of us. There are certain things that all of us have to do in order to achieve self-realization. The specifics vary, and getting right understanding is one of those. As you know from that song which our singer sang, if by thinking we mean logical analysis alone and getting locked in that logic, then we don't really reach ultimate understanding, but we think we have. So the Whispers is, I'll read an excerpt from the Whispers because it's a longer one. This is Demand for Control of the Unruly Senses. And the excerpt I read is more demand for self-control. That's what Yogananda talks about. O Spirit, let me not feed my insatiable sense cravings with further wrong deeds. Teach me to discipline myself that I think always in terms of my true happiness. Teach me to govern my will to not cooperate with desires, but to feed them only wholesome acts. Teach me to cooperate with thy will to perform every duty harmoniously, and to sing the one little song thou hast given me to sing in full harmony with thy cosmic plan. And, O Spirit, spare not thy rod of discipline if ever I stray again toward the senses and away from my true path of craving for thee. So, having talked about what does not bring right understanding, which is just logical thinking, the beauty of all the Sunday service topics is they can be lifted from every thread, many threads, and different threads shed light on different aspects of the same principle or the same teaching, which is great, because imagine this book, Rays, being used for centuries, at least maybe much more, and if it's not ever new, it would be a problem. But I think it will always remain ever new, and that's the beauty of it. I want to pick up achieving understanding by the theme of controlling our reactive process, because when we can control our reactive process, we transcend our ego. And if we can't control our reactive process, we don't really have an understanding of things that are supposed to be done. That's why the main purpose of Kriya Yoga, of the yogic path, is to gain control of the reactive process. But the reactive process is tricky. It's not enough to know all the principles, all the teachings, all the techniques. When the wrong person says the wrong thing on the wrong time at the wrong topic, we explode. You know, we react, even though we have read autobiography of a yogi and we have meditated that morning and we have done everything we have done. This is, and there is a solution, I think, to that, which is to have a mantra. You know, when you feel yourself being shaken, it's very hard to grasp and figure out, okay, our teachings are so vast. What do I clasp to or cling to in order to remain centered? And this is where a mantra can help. See, that's where the Bhagavad Gita says, if the intellect doesn't have fixity, then it becomes ramified. And a mantra, if there's a go-to that we can go to even subconsciously, when we feel our reactive process has sort of flared up, then there's a chance of controlling ourselves. So there's many mantras we can use. As you know, Om Guru is one. God alone was Gyanamata's mantra, who was a direct disciple of Yogananda's. But I want to suggest one for many reasons, which perhaps is new. And that's because I want to tie it to the topic of discipleship also, since we have the Living Discipleship group here. And that is the first line. I always think Swami did things for our benefit, everything, including the first line he ever said to his guru. And we all know this story. He had read autobiography of a yogi. He was really seeking, was completely, his heart was transformed. by reading that book, and he right away took the bus from New York to Los Angeles, 4 days of driving or being driven in the bus. And he finally met his guru after a long back and forth. He went to the different locations where Yogananda was supposed to be there. And finally, he met Yogananda, and Yogananda asked him, "What may I do for you?" And Swamiji's first sentence, which was not something he had rehearsed, it just came out of his heart, was, "I want to be your disciple." And the reason I am choosing this particular sentence is related to something else, a story which I've shared with a few people, but not in this kind of a setting. A few years ago, one of a long-time disciples from our online community, I share these teachings online, decided to pull out of, Ananda or the online community. And when I asked, "What's the reason?" This person, she said, "Well, it's all the same after so many years, 2, 3, 4 years of tuning in. It's the same chants, it's the same teachings, it's the same principles I've heard again and again. And my heart longs for something new. I have these singing bowls, I have these other instruments, I have these other mantras, I have this and that, all these other speakers." And when she said that, because she was a sincere person and she was somebody who was happily married, a mother of two. And I said, "This is like saying you need a new husband every few days or weeks to feel your relationship with him is ever new, or you need new children every few months because it's the same children and it's getting boring." And the thing is, with relationships, keeping them ever new depends on what we bring to that relationship. So, especially if someone's taking living discipleship, the altar won't change. The chants won't change. Many of Swami's music won't change. But there are examples of many, many people here who have kept these teachings ever new for decades, for their entire lifetime. Swamiji was one, and many others. And if we want to keep a relationship ever new, the onus is on us. This is why the title of the program, Living Discipleship, is so nice. We have to infuse it with life. We have to keep it ever new. And with that as the background, we can look at that statement Swami made, "I want to be your disciple," as a historic statement. Or it can be our mantra whenever we are faced with choices. What do we lead with? We can mentally think of the guru and say, "I want to be your disciple," in the way I make my decision. Should I ask for a new house? Should I change my job? Should I ask for a separation? Somebody asks you to do something that you don't want to. It's okay to say no. But if we lead from the right angle, or with the right thrust, then the answer is often far more well advised. "I want to be your disciple." And I have also found, I want to add a couple things here. There's two ways, because the next question arises, okay, how do I be a disciple? I have found in my own life two things to be very, very important in really wanting to be a disciple. One is have an advisor. Because discipleship is helped by being in tune or being in consultation with somebody whose wisdom you can trust. And the second, which I'm realizing only recently, is going back to the words of our vows. Many of us take a numerous vows. We take the vow of discipleship. Some of us have been ministers or light bearers, and there's a prayer of ordination. There's sevaka vows, sadhaka vows, renunciate order vows. Because I teach, one of the courses I teach is the discipleship course, and I have to give the vow every so often. Finally, it struck me that this vow was not something I was to take the day I became a disciple and then forget about it, but it's a roadmap. It's a guideline on how to be a disciple. And if I'm smart, when I make decisions, I can go back to that vow now and then, and reading it, realize, this is how I should be acting, rather than how I thought I should be acting. And this came to the fore. So because I said we talk about having an advisor and having a vow, I want to give you an example from my own life. And I had the blessing of having Nayaswami Jaya as my advisor. I don't think he thinks of it as a blessing necessarily that he had to advise me, because I required a lot of work. You know, some advisees, I don't know, don't require a lot of work. I wasn't like that. And Jayaji can blame Narayan for this story, because he inspired me. He talked about how Jaya had helped him and in the inner renewal retreat panel sharing. And then I remembered, hey, I can tell some more stories of how he had helped me. And I have here, because I said we are talking about controlling a reactive process. When I came to Ananda more than a decade ago, as happens, you are trained in the world to work in a certain way. And that's not necessarily the way that will take us to self-realization. You know, oftentimes we have to undo that training. And it's not a pretty process. It's something we really have to work on, be willing to work on for ourselves. So my own thing was, maybe sometimes my emails weren't as well written as they should have been, you know? And I suspect I'm not the only one. There is a line in the ordination prayer for ministers. I want to read this. You know, Swamiji, when he made all these things, he was very wise in the lines he put in there. I want to read this line which is there, which all of us should practice anyway, because we represent this path. May my voice be rich with the harmony of your presence. This is one of the lines from that ordination prayer. And voice doesn't just mean the speaking voice. This is, by the way, what Jesus was talking about. He said, what comes out of the mouth is far more important than what goes in. But what comes out of the mouth is not just the voice. It's often the emails that we send. It's the instant messages that we send. It's the phone voice calls that we leave. And also sometimes the thoughts that we think, you know, even though we might not give them garb in the form of words. Nayaswami Haridas, who's in Bangalore, used to sometimes say, I think it was him, but knowing him, it probably was him. Imagine there was a printer that was attached to your brain and it printed all the thoughts of your that you had for a day. How many would you like to read that? How many people would you show that printout to? How many are thinking of the paper shredder? You know, probably everybody is. But the point here is, we sometimes do these things, you know, where the way we write emails, and we think we are so wise. We have it all down to a T. Logically, our email makes sense. Yes, it is trenchant. Yes, it is hurtful, probably, but you know, it's true. It's true. And it's like, that's why that song they chose, the musicians, was so nice. There's one melody there, and then there's that yapping. I, my, me, mine. That's what's happening. And we think we are doing things right without knowing what the heck we are doing. And life, that's a blessing that we are on this planet with so many people around us. These lessons would not be learned if we were one person per city. We have to be around people to realize how much work we really need and to make that a joyful process. It can be made a joyful process. So more than a decade ago, you know, I was helping with the work in Mumbai, and some of the emails, it was a high pressure job. I mean, you have to be in India to realize it's not as well settled as life here in Ananda Village. It's a frontier country, you know, you're making forays. And it's a whole different, and the temperature is high, and I don't mean the physical temperature. It's, you're dealing with so many things. But anyway, that's no excuse. That's no excuse. So I had written something, and Jayaji, who was then the spiritual director for India, he was a part of that process. After he read my email, he wrote me a response, and I want to read this response. Jayaji is right there, but... And it's a beautiful blend of truth, the rod of discipline, which the whispers talked about, and learning how to control our reactive process. And I suspect in one way or the other, it applies to many of us here. So dear Sagar, having been very busy, it is just now that I'm getting around to reading your letter back to this person. Your position is not an easy one, and I applaud your willingness and spirit to take up your bow. You know, take up your bow means the Bhagavad Gita. You are willing to say, yes, I will do what's been given to you. Leading and organizing as you do is full of frustrations, exasperations, disappointments, and headaches. All of those. In other words, it is full of opportunities for spiritual growth if approached in the right spirit. I would like to make a couple of suggestions. You may not be able to help this person, but no matter what the provocation, you must answer in a polite manner. Unfortunately, you haven't done that. At the very top of your email, you will see it is from Ananda Mumbai. That carries with it a responsibility. You are the public representative of Swami, Dhyana, Jyotish, Devi, me, and all your Guru Bhais. In other words, you speak for all of us who serve Ananda. As such, you must make an extra effort to convey Master's and Swami's vibration. When you get frustrated, as you may be entitled to do from time to time, you must bite your tongue. Or, in this case, keep your fingers off the keyboard. Never reply hastily, and if you have something you suspect may be taken in the wrong spirit, wait a day or two and consider whether it needs to be said. If it does, do it kindly. And he underlines that, do it kindly. The strong man is he who can restrain himself for the larger good. It is a tough assignment. Please take heart and know that all of us go through this and have learned the hard way. Self-control is a form of tapasya. Difficult, but when mastered, it gives power. Jaya. So the reason I read this is, you know, one of the lines from the minister's vow is that may my voice be rich with the harmony of thy presence. But another line, again, where if some with the light bearer, prayer for light bearer ordination is very interesting. It says, help me to be out of the way that you may flow through me, to say the truth at all times, the beneficial truth. And, you know, that was strong medicine that Jayaji, bless him, and my blessing that I could receive it from him, had for me. But I suspect if you read the tone of that email, you see it has the harmony of Divine Mother's presence. And he is out of the way. It's not coming from him, but he's just being an instrument for sharing something that would help me do my role as a disciple. You know, I want to be a disciple. I don't necessarily know how. I don't necessarily know when I veered from being a disciple. But it's a great blessing when somebody steps in this way and helps us to correct our line of action so that we are moving in the right direction. But the beauty of this thing also is something I read a few days ago from Living Wisely, Living Well, which Swamiji wrote one reading for every day. It says, be patient with people. Remember, it takes incarnations to emerge from the pit of delusion. Think how long it probably took you to reach your present level of understanding, and how long it often takes to rid oneself of even one major flaw. And so a part of helping others change or ourselves changing is giving people time. And the beauty of working with people here at Ananda, including with Jayaji, is not only do they hold the line, but they give people time to make their mistakes, to learn at their own pace. Because you would think that this one letter would have been enough for me to change. But I didn't read the postscript, you know, which was an ongoing feature, as you'll see. So after that letter, Jayaji wrote this. P.S. From your original email, those words that I marked in red could have been omitted. Those words in black are yours and could have remained. those words in green are mine and could have been added. And then I looked at my original email, pretty much everything was in red. You know, there was a few lines in black there which could have remained. But he had to do this numerous times before it started penetrating my brain. You know, every now and then, and he was the spiritual director of Ananda India. I wasn't the only job he had. You know, there was many other things for him to do. India's 1.4 billion people, as you know. But again and again, he would write me patiently, and he would say, you know, those things in green, I have added, those things in red. You know, gradually they started shrinking, I think. I would have deleted. Those things in black, I would have kept, you know. Until finally, one day I made slow progress. I said, now, Jayaji, what I'll do is, I don't think I can change the way I write yet, but I'll send you my email before I send it to that person. You do your color scheming and let me know beforehand. Then I'll edit my email and then send it out. And so he did that too, you know, now and then. And in fact, here's one of the notes he wrote with a separate line. You would do better, I think, if you are more friendly in your language. Sugar attracts the bees more than vinegar. Now, you know, I have advanced engineering degrees and I have been pretty successful as a student. You would think I would know that sugar attracts bees more than vinegar and a friendlier language is better to get things done or to spread the vibration of these teachings. But isn't that something we often forget? And isn't that something that we often need reminding about? When we read that story from the Bible, we think how stupid were the Pharisees that they thought how they ate mattered more than how they spoke. I have thought that until I realized, I looked back at this postscript from more than a decade ago, and I was like, I didn't realize that being friendly was that important. And I was goofing up big time by not being that. I suspect there's enough people here which have some variation of that, whether in your relationship, if you're married. Sometimes, I suspect, we realize that we have replaced the sugar with vinegar. If you're working, sometimes we realize that the sugar and the vinegar have been switched without us knowing. We reached out for the sugar but grasped the vinegar or the chili flakes or whatever it is, pepper spray, I don't know, whatever. You know, and watch the tone of your email. Your emails, my emails, and by you, I don't mean you, all of us, are a great reflection of things we need to change. Sometimes our emails seem so perfectly written. Intellectually immaculate, making the point, trenchant, cutting. What are we cutting? You know, the hearts of our friends and our well-wishers, and we don't even realize that's what we are doing. But over time, see, when I went to see Jairam, who's serving life without parole in prison, he made a particular analogy, which is true. He said, which I'd never heard, but probably it's true. He said, Master said, we are all in a stew. You know, the various, you know, environment being stronger than willpower, in a stew, the different juices, the vegetables secrete their juices and all mix, and you get all the juices. And he was saying being in a prison is hard for that reason, because he's surrounded in that vibration, but he does his best to keep in the right environment. But the blessing of being in Ananda and really being, not physically alone, but really being in Ananda, I want to be a disciple, with all that it entails, is we are in this too, which is of divine union with God, of deepening discipleship. And over time, we start changing. We start changing even if we don't know. So I want to share the happy ending. Many, many years later, you know, it took a lot of time. Here's another, you know, I had written something to somebody else, and Jayaji was probably CC'd to that email. And here's what he wrote to me in reply. Sagar, you gave an excellent answer. It was explanatory, sympathetic, and in no way defensive. Jaya. You know, that's the maximum praise you can get from him, which is just so you know. But that doesn't mean I have overcome this particular tendency. But you know, you start overcoming it naturally. And we think we do it. We think we do it. Remember, again, going back to Swami, Master told him, get devotion. He chanted, he prayed, and he thought he was changing himself. Until he heard Master say, look how I have changed Walter. You know, so that's the ultimate understanding. We do our little part. Others do their little part on our behalf. We allow each other to make mistakes. The beauty of Ananda, which all of us, those taking living discipleship now, those stepping into more outward roles, is to hold the line, keep the standard high. But that compassion, that personal attention, allowing people to have time, being a friend, we receive emails from people who try to tune into these or other teachings from other organizations. And sometimes they write how coldly they feel they were treated. And you know, that is one thing that we want to always avoid. We don't have to lower our standards. And that is what people here are so good at. So it's a blessing in my life. If I was just in school and getting my brain fed with more theory and stuff, I wouldn't have realized many of the things I have realized as a part of being in this environment of Ananda. And I hope everybody here keeps tuning into those examples who refine their consciousness and go back to the vows. I'll end with this because many people asked about the Nayaswami vow, which I took about a month ago. You know, we have many students online, they don't know what these vows are, which is why I was thinking and finally realized it's not just about taking the vow, but using them as guiding marks for the way we interact. And very recently, I was in a situation where I felt I was not treated well, you know, I felt insulted. And so with this new inspiration in mind, I went to that Nayaswami vow to see if there was something there that could guide me in my discipleship. And it has a peculiar line in there. Let me read this. I no longer exist as a separate entity, but offer my life unreservedly into thy great ocean of awareness. And I said, well, if I no longer exist as a separate entity, how can I be insulted? You know, can God be insulted? No. Master, could he be insulted? No. Narayan gave a very nice story of somebody trying to insult Master, and he just was unruffled with it because he no longer existed as an ego. And of course, that's an aspiration. Don't insult me too often. You might. I am getting just starting to get the hang of this. So, but you know, I see Vayu here, whom I knew the first day I came to Ananda in Pune, and he's been a great inspiration that way. He's very non-reactive. You know, I've never had him say anything in a way that came from his ego or from being vindictive, and that's a lot to say. So there's many hidden saints here, not just the people who stand on the dais and do all the talking. But it's our blessing to keep our path, you know, we walk from here to the expanding light or to our homes, and we feel we are with many of these saints, whether we know them or not. And being a part of that stew, quote unquote stew, we change ourselves. So many blessings to the living disciples, and much joy to you.
A sailor from England remarked to a foe,
the reason we win is we pray ere we go.
But we pray as well, and just look at our debt.
Ah, but we pray in English,
the Englishman said.
I'm and a birch canoe, and school books of foreign trips and college prawns, good times and friends of plenty, yes, and also you.
But somehow in this box would only fit one school,
one family, one country, and one social rule,
and certainly one church for only my ways right,
and anyone with other ways is just a fool. Well, so I used to think, but now I must confess, at judging fools I wasn't any great success. Truth somehow lived without me, though I called it mine. What box can hold the world? It's just preposterous.
Love is all I know, sun rays on the snow of a winter long in darkness without song. Oh, my heart's a fire, burning all desire, only you. Life's waves all end in foam.